Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my main man, Josh Cohen, calling out of Ottawa.
All right.
Oh, should I call you Matthew today?
What's up, Mr. Matthew? Mr. McConaughey.
How's it going, man? How you doing?
Everything's good. Can't complain.
Look at you. So chipper.
I'm happy, so man. Bad. My Raptors have won 5 in a row. Things are good.
No. Relax. Can you really be that happy after they almost dropped this, a 20-point lead against Washington of all teams?
They're building their armor for the playoffs, you know? It's better that they get in these situations where they're in close games now versus blowing out every single team to the playoffs and not really knowing what they're supposed to be doing in crunch time. That's the way I look at it.
It's very humbling of them.
Yes. Great, yes. They put themselves in these bad situations just to ensure that they know what they have to do in April and May and June.
Oh, June.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very optimistic now.
Well, I have been the entire year. Haven't changed on that.
This is true. How do you feel about the new McCaw signing?
I like it. The guy's only 23 years old. They're only paying $1 million, and he's going to be, you know, a 13th, 14th guy, but he'll play throughout the course of the year. And, you know, CJ Miles hasn't been good the entire year, so he'll probably just take his spot in the rotation, maybe play 10 minutes a game in certain games, and if you play as well, maybe it becomes, you know, what Norman Powell sort of has been this year, in that he's earned extra minutes and he's, you know, looked a lot more comfortable the last 2 weeks, especially in the offense. So maybe at some point, you know, once Norm's contract runs out, maybe McCaw's the next guy in line. He's only 23, like I said, and he has shown some skills with Golden State. He had a good run, I think, about a year ago when he was playing like 20, 25 minutes a game when Golden State had their injuries, and he played pretty well. So I think he'll fit right in.
Yeah, he's actually a really good addition. Plus, he can shoot. I find that the
Raptors... Yeah, that's debatable.
Yeah, like, sometimes. Most of the time, he can shoot. What do you mean?
He hasn't really shot the ball well. I mean, he hasn't really played that much either, but
well, I think okay. When like healthy, he was able to shoot, is what I mean.
Yeah, I think overall, though, his stats show he was shooting, like, 32% from three, though, so...
Nah.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. Small sample size.
Small sample size. We're, like, a bench player on a championship team.
It's the truth. The guy barely played, you know, in the big games, obviously, but when he did play, he showed, you know, different things on the court. I think the biggest thing is, like, his defensive, you know, versatility. He'll fit right in that regard with Toronto. They have so many guys that are long and lanky and can defend multiple positions, so he'll fit right in that regard.
That's true. That's very true. Oh, man. All right. So I want to talk firstly about, since we're already talking about Toronto, this weird Washington game that happened on Sunday afternoon. Obviously, it went to double overtime. The Pats-Chargers game was way out of hand, so nobody really cared about it. All eyes were just glued to the Raptors, for at least where I was. I was at a bar watching it. Obviously, like 80% of the TVs were on the Pats game, but realistically, the whole crowd was watching the Toronto game on like two or three tiny TVs, but we made it work. How the hell did that happen? Like, wouldn't you just assume that Bradley Beal, the one guy on this team that can create a shot for himself and can actually shoot the ball consistently well, is the one guy you actually got to lock down? How do you let him get that hot? That's what I was more worried about seeing from Toronto.
Going back and watching the fourth quarter, I think the biggest thing was Toronto stopped their defensive pressure for the most part, and it forced them to play half-court basketball. But on defense, Washington was just hitting absolutely insane, unsustainable shots. I mean, Bradley Beal had two pull-up threes, a guy's right in his face. Otto Porter had a couple threes in the corner where he was like guarded pretty well as well. But I guess once a team gets in a rhythm, it's hard to stop them, right? So once you gain momentum, and momentum I think is a real thing in basketball, even though it's something that's been debated forever, but it definitely is a real thing, especially at home. And Washington must have hit like 10 out of 11 shots in a row once the starters came back from in for Toronto. And the Pascal at center experiment for that game didn't really work. I think they were minus 10
in
the fourth
quarter
with that. So, yeah, surprisingly, I thought it was the opposite, but they went back to Serge afterwards. He didn't play well until obviously hit that game-winning shot in the second overtime. But, you know, I think it's just one of those games where, you know, Toronto was up and they just got complacent and they stopped, you know, applying the pressure. And Washington got comfortable and they hit a bunch of shots in a row.
I think at one point in the fourth quarter, like you said, they were legitimately like 10 for 10. Whereas Toronto was, I think, maybe like 4 for 10 or something like that. I was pretty shocked. But then, yeah, that Serge shot at the end, wasn't that reminiscent of like Tim Thomas against the Lakers a few years ago? By a few years, I mean like 10 years, obviously, but...
Doesn't feel like it.
It feels like yesterday, man. I still remember that watching that game.
Yep.
He got the ball, like the exact same wing position, except Steve Nash was on his left side instead of his right. Doesn't even look at Nash. At least Serge like did the little pump fake to pass the ball to, I think it was Satoransky or Porter, to make them bite for it. But Tim Thomas just like let that thing fly instantly. No regard for anyone else. It was actually a really nice shot. And then, yeah, the Serge shot was more surprising than anything else. I don't think anyone expected him to actually hit it that easily. No rim, just straight cash.
Yeah, and if he didn't pump pass to Satoransky, would have deflected that pass, and then Toronto would either been down another few points or would have had to, you know, take the ball out of bounds and then drop a new play. So that was quite shocking, since Serge was absolutely terrible that game. He was awful, especially, you know, the coverage against Beal in the pick and roll in the fourth quarter. He just never really stepped up as far as he should have. And when he did, he stepped up too far, allowing like a lane to the basket for Thomas O'Bryant. And he was able to get in the lane and pick apart the Raptors defense, surprisingly, or hit those little floaters in the lanes. So something they have to clean up. But I think the biggest thing to take away from the game was the issue that's come up way too often this season for the Raptors is in their half court offense. Sometimes they just go ISO way too much in the fourth quarter and they run down the clock instead of actually running offense. And, you know, with Pascal on the floor with Serge, you know, sometimes there's a lack of shooting because teams really pressure Lowry and Kawhi into situations where they're double teamed or there's a second guy that's waiting for them and these guys have to be forced to knock down shots, and they're taking way too many shots to play in the shot clock, and they just don't have enough shooting on the floor to counteract that, I don't think.
But that's sort of what you're expecting to happen in the playoffs too, right?
That's the problem. They need another shooter, but that's another issue for a month from now. So
Patrick McCaw, boy.
And I don't know about that.
This game, they were also missing Danny Green, so it is a major loss, but you're obviously going to run across injuries in the playoffs as well. You're not going to have it like a...
No, Danny Green played in that game.
Did he? Who were they? They were missing somebody. Other than
Jimmy. They're missing Fred VanVleet.
Oh, that's right. Hip injury.
Yeah, and Danny Green played Beal really well in the first three quarters, too. I think Beal started 6 for 23 from the field.
Yeah, he was cold.
And then once OG got on him, Beal just, you know, got comfortable, I guess, and started hitting those crazy step-back shots. And then once Green got in the game, it didn't really matter that Green was on him anymore. But Green did a really good job for three quarters, but maybe just Nick Nurse took too long to bring him back in.
Would you have put Kawhi on him instead of Danny Green?
Not at that point. I mean, he was already hot. So
yeah,
your best option might have been just to have Pascal at center and just, you know, play through it, even though they were struggling at the time, and just either, you know, double team the ball or just have Pascal just try to guard him and, you know, take a contested shot. But
yeah, but then you just lack a lot of rebounding afterwards. And Thomas Bryant was eating everything inside.
Yeah, despite Serge being on the boards, but. But, yeah. You know, Serge has struggled with that, you know, at certain points throughout the course of the year.
He's not the best rebounder, that's for sure.
No, but Pascal made up for it last game. He had 19 rebounds, which is a career high for him, and he's been playing really well. Him and Kawhi, like, their synergy together has been really good. I think in the last five games, Kawhi's averaged around 5 assists a game.
That's
I think 60% of those assists have gone to Siakam, so those guys are meshing really well together.
Ooh, that chemistry. Maybe something to carry into next year.
I hope so. Two young stars of the Raptors.
My God. All right. What do we think of Bradley Beal in Washington? Obviously, since John Wall's gone down, I think they're hovering around a 500 record right now. A lot better than when he was actually there. Do we think that Bradley Beal can carry this team? Because at this rate, I mean, he's doing a pretty damn good job. Not that, you know, they could be much worse than having Wall around, but I mean, it's not bad. Satoransky is a decent point guard to run with Beal right now. He could obviously be more consistent, but Beal running it on his own, he's, from what I've seen, there's a lot of stat lines that are like, you know, 38-7 kind of deals. It's basically putting up similar to like LeBron numbers over these past like 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's sort of reminded me of Gilbert Arenas back in the day, where he just has, you know, full board just to do whatever the hell he wants to do on the court. And he's shown that he's more than just a shooter and a guy that can come off screens. He's handled the ball really well, obviously, in this stretch. And Washington has played more, you know, long lineups now that they have Ariza, with Beal at the one a lot of the time, or just having Satoransky at the one as well. And they have, you know, Jeff Green, Ariza, O'Brien, Otto Porter's played really well the last couple of games. So they have a lot of, you know, long, lanky guys, and their defensive deficiencies haven't really shown up too much. I mean, they're scoring a lot of points because they play at a fast pace. But, you know, with John Wall and Morris out, I think their defense has gone up a little bit. And offensively, like you said, like Beal's just controlling the game, and he's shown that he's definitely an all-star this year, despite, you know, Washington not being a playoff spot.
That'd be pretty crazy for him to be an all-star. Okay, so I looked it up.
He deserves games to be an all-star. There's not 12 players in the East better than him.
Really?
No way.
I don't know, man.
There's no way.
I don't know. Dwayne Wade is eating up one of the spots already, so
we'll see about that.
We'll see about the guards. Anyways, I just want to read these numbers out for you. In the 12 games without John Wall, Beal is averaging 31.5 points and 7.1 assists on 41 minutes, with a true shooting percentage of 58%. How insane is that? They're slightly over 500, but they have a top 10 offense since Wall's been out, and like a decent defense.
Yeah, I mean, talking about guys carrying their teams with, like, you know, Beal with Washington and Harden with Houston, you just worry about, you know, the injuries coming up, because Beal especially, not Harden, obviously, but Beal especially has had some foot injuries in the past, where he's played too many minutes. And when he came back, Washington really limited his minutes to like 28 to 30 minutes a game. So with him playing 40 plus minutes a game now, it's something you really have to keep track of. And you have to really consider, like, what is Washington really trying to achieve this year? But, you know, the past few seasons around the trade deadline, they've often traded their first round pick for veteran help. They traded for Marcin Gortat 1 year, Markieff Morris the next, and obviously they traded for Ariza this year, not with a first round pick, I don't believe, but I think they still have that. But you just wonder if they're going to go in that direction where they're going to try to make the playoffs by any means necessary, or if they're just going to maybe let Ariza go and trade him somewhere to get value back and then look at tanking for Zion.
It doesn't seem like they would try to tank, though. They've never shown it in their past to only to give up on them, and they're only like 2 games away from the playoffs right now, or 2.5, I guess, out of 8th spot. It's not that bad. Ahead of them, you were looking at teams like Detroit, Orlando, Charlotte. They can easily beat those teams.
Yeah, at the same time, though, if you're Washington, I know they have like a GM that's been there for the last 15 years, and he has job security, unless he doesn't really care about the product, it doesn't seem like. But looking at it as a Wizards fan, then you're like, John Wall's out the entire year. This roster, in terms of cap flexibility, is totally capped out. They have no real way of improvement beyond their first-round pick this year. So why not just tank the rest of the year, get John Wall back healthy come next year, and then you have a core of Wall, Beal, and Porter, plus their first-round pick, which in the case of a tank this year will be a top-10 pick. At least they add a lot of talent to their roster. And obviously Thomas O'Brien's been playing well, so just let him go, play 30, 35 minutes a game, let him develop this year. And then hopefully get, you know, top 5 to 10 pick and keep adding to your roster.
But if they make it to the playoffs as an 8th seed, they get to go against Toronto, and they barely lost that game.
Yeah, but the previous games against Toronto, they got crushed. Let's be honest here. Toronto would sweep them, even though Toronto doesn't really have a history of sweeping anybody in the playoffs. But I think that would be their first sweep in history.
That would be so funny if they actually convinced themselves that they had a chance. Yeah. I mean, I guess you have to. Shouts to Brennan Jennings thinking they're going to beat the Heat in 6.
I know everybody's counting us out, but for us, you know, there's really no pressure on us right now. So we just going to go out there and play basketball and win.
And win?
Yeah.
And how many games?
6. We're going to win in 6.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got to be confident.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they probably have more talent overall than Charlotte and Detroit. Just in terms of like their main core players. I mean, obviously Detroit has two guys that are really good and Charlotte has one, but you know, yeah. Washington actually has some good players around Beal. And, you know, Porter is a guy that stepped up in the last few games, like I said, and he's in a role where he has to shoot the ball now versus before where they had John Wall, where he was just sort of setting him up and forcing him into spot up shots. Now Porter showing that he can do more than that, just like Beal has. Well,
yeah, I guess I'm still not sold on Porter for the time being. I think he's riding a bit of a hot, a quote unquote hot streak right now, but I don't see it lasting.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's forced into taking 15 to 20 shots a game now, and he looks more comfortable out there taking those shots. He's been more aggressive. You know, there's been reports that he's been the type of guy to be really timid and telling his teammates that he's sorry for shooting certain shots and them just telling him, like, you have to shoot these shots or else we're not going to win. So.
Oh, man. The yo, my bad, my bad. Bad shot, my fault. I love that. I do that every time.
No, you don't. You have zero conscience on the court, and Porter should take your line of thinking and just have no conscience as well.
Yeah. Call me up, Otto. I got you, man. Even though I don't believe in it. Harsh. All right. Let's move on to the next trade rumor. Obviously, yesterday, Woj broke the news that Dallas is actively trying to trade Dennis Smith Jr. Two hot teams that he mentioned are Phoenix and Orlando, and Phoenix today already said that they're not really in contention for this, that they don't really want him. So Dennis Smith Jr., let's just go with Woj's idea of him going to Orlando, I guess. Say let's exchange him for Augustine. I'm assuming Augustine's contract isn't that crazy. It should be similar. How do you think he would fit in that into that team with the like a young Magic core?
Well, they definitely need a point guard, obviously. I think that's a logical pick. I mean, he mentioned the Suns as well, but then a well-connected Suns reporter said that the Suns have no interest in him because they already have enough scorers on the perimeter. And obviously they want Devin Booker to, you know, continue to play the point guard position.
They don't need a point guard in Phoenix. Absurd.
Is Smith really a point guard, though? I mean, I guess he is in today's NBA, but, you know, he's not a great playmaker. He's more of a primary ball handler that likes to score.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what you want point guards to be now. Like, I think more than half the point guards in the league, like, starting caliber point guards in the league aren't actually passers. They're just scorers who handle the rock a lot more.
True, but they also have to be able to make plays when they are cut off. And I think that's the one thing that where he just hasn't really developed in that regard. It's only his second year, obviously, but the reports have said that Carlisle's not happy with his decision-making. And obviously off the ball, he's not as effective. He has shot a pretty good percentage from the three-point line this year. He's at 38%. On four attempts overall, and his shooting percentage has gone up from 39 to 44% overall. But you know, when he's playing off the ball with Luka, there's a lot of times where Luka will get him open and then he'll hesitate for a second, and then they have to reset the offense because he's not a catch and go type of player, like a player like we just talked about with Otto Porter, a guy that can just catch the ball and sort of make a play quickly off the dribble. He's more of a catch and hold type of guy. So I think that he'd fit into Orlando because they need another playmaker. Augustine's obviously not that guy, and they do have a young core, like you said. So why not take a risk and maybe trade a future first round pick and try to acquire, you know, a talent that hasn't really blossomed as of yet, but could with, you know, more opportunity in Orlando.
It's hilarious that DJ Augustine is a starting point guard for the team.
Yeah, going into the year, they had the worst point guard rotation out of anybody. They had Augustine and then Jerry and Grant.
Well, hold on. It's slightly better than Phoenix, at least.
No, not when you put Booker in that position. Booker's a much better point guard, you know.
Man, nobody's calling Booker a point guard. I don't think that they believe that's true. I think this is just part of Phoenix wanting to tank some more. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I don't think that's it. I think he's played really well on the ball. Like, it's not like a Zach LaVine situation from a few years ago where LaVine was put in that point guard position to see if he can improve his ball handling. I think Devin Booker's already there, but they just want to see if he can be like a guy that can shoulder that much of the load. And I think so far he's shown that he can, but obviously they have to get more talent around him.
But we just said that, I guess, Smith Jr. is all, that kind of point guard where you don't really want him to be playmaking, right? Like, Booker's not playmaking for anyone. He's sort of just handling the rock as they go up the court and then doing his own thing.
No, I disagree with that. I think he's shown that he's a pretty good playmaker off the dribble,
what?
Too. I think he's averaging around six or seven assists a game.
For other people?
Yeah, absolutely. He's been a good pick and roll ball handler this year. He's been really effective in that role.
No way. Let me look this up.
I believe he's averaging around seven assists a game this year, and him and Aiden have had really good chemistry together as well.
Devin, wow. Okay. Well, that shut me up. 6.9 assists a game. I am impressed.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, he's shown that he's able to, you know, be a high usage guy, but not really be a low efficiency type of player, which a lot of people thought he was coming into this year.
Yeah.
So I think they just, like I said, they just have to get a few more guys around him, which they're probably going to do in the draft now, since they're, I think, they're third worst in the NBA right now, record wise. So, I mean, you get another guy around, you know, Booker and Aiden, and you got something there because they have some wing talent already.
Okay. What if we can get Dennis Smith Jr. to Detroit? I'm thinking,
well, Dallas is not going to want Reggie Jackson, that's for sure.
Stanley Johnson?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think Dallas is going to want a first-round pick because Smith still has value around the NBA. I mean, he has played relatively well this year, and he's still really young.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's the type of guy that you would expect to get at least a first-round pick for versus, like, you know, a veteran-type player that a lot of these teams are trying to pawn off. Like, Atlanta's just trying to get anything they can for guys like Bazemore, Lynn, and Deadman. It's not like a situation like that, I don't think.
Okay, what if Dallas got Jose Calderon?
Fair trade.
Yeah, man. Rick Carlisle loves old point guards. Barea, Devin Harris.
And Calderon played there for a little while, too, I think.
Yeah, Calderon is basically a taller Barea. Let's be real. Just not as fast, but a better shooter.
He's a mummified version of Barea.
Which is saying a lot.
Hey, Barea was really good this year. And now, you know, Jalen Brunson's going to have to step up into that role. But, you know, going back to Smith, I think with Smith and Doncic on the court together, I believe their offensive efficiency was like bottom five in the NBA as part of like their starting lineup. And with Brunson on the court, it's actually in the top 15. So those guys just fit better together than Smith and Doncic. And I think that after half a year, Dallas just said, let's just put the ball in Luka's hands and let him go.
Half a year? Dude, it was like 20 games top. And then it was just all hail Luka, let's go.
Yeah, I think the offense did change after Smith had a couple injuries, and then once he came back in the lineup, he was just sort of the guy that brings the ball up the court and passes to Luka and sort of stands around the perimeter.
I like it, as it should be. Luka is possibly a generational player at this point. Dennis Smith Jr. is on the trade block on his second year. Where else can you see him going? Like, who needs a scoring point guard, in a sense? You know what I mean?
I mean, you look around the NBA, I mean, most teams have their point guard of the future or the point guard of the now. I mean, even looking at a team like Toronto, they have Lowry for another 2 years, but after that, they might be looking for somebody. But even a situation like this, they wouldn't be looking at Smith, obviously. But yeah. Most teams have their guy, whether it's now or the next couple of years into the future. So it's really hard to see another team pop up. Maybe like Cleveland. Cleveland could be an option as well, since they have a lack of talent overall. They might just want to make an upgrade. Talent level.
Colin Sexton. You know,
they already have Sexton, but.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, I mean, he's played relatively well this year, stats wise, anyway. I mean, overall, he's been terrible, but.
Yeah. What about New Orleans?
Yeah, but who are they going to trade for him? Another first round pick? I mean, yeah. And they've already given away so many first round picks.
I mean, if I were them, I would just sell as much as I could in future assets, because it's not like, you know. Dell Demps is trying to save his job at this point.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's a win now type of move, though, because Smith needs to be developed. I think he needs to go to a team where he's like the primary ball handler to develop his skills, and I think Orlando's the best fit for that.
Yeah. What about Chicago? Oh, Chris Dunn. Never mind.
Yeah, I think
right. Everyone's got a point guard.
Pretty much. I mean, one team I'd be looking at as a possible destination. Actually, no, I can't even see that. I was going to say Indiana because, you know, they have Collison and Joseph, but they're trying to win now too, yeah. So it'd be hard to see him really fitting into a team that's already really good.
Also, I don't think he would do well in that system. That's a big, heavy point system. You know what I mean? It'd sort of be like how he is now in Dallas, where he would have to be off ball because Depot is going to handle the rock most of the time.
True. I mean, if they wanted to make a massive move and, like, win right now, Dallas could always look to possibly trade him for Conley. if they had enough, salary to fill in with maybe Matthews and another player. But Conley and Doncic would be fun together, that's for sure.
That'd be sick. But that's also $27 million of a difference that you need to fill in.
True.
Sounds a little steep.
Yeah, I mean, outside of that, maybe Washington too. I mean, Satoransky's played well since, Wall went down. But he's a guy they can look at for half a year and maybe make a determination and try to trade Wall in the offseason, which it doesn't really seem likely, obviously. But
wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, I think the last team I'd look at is the Knicks. Because they're also lacking, point guard talent, and they took Ntilikina for Smith. So maybe they try to make up for that. Man. And that would be a good trade, actually. Ntilikina for Smith. I mean, he'd probably fit in well with Doncic being like a defensive anchor of the point guard position. And then you have Smith providing excitement for the rest of the year for New York, who's probably not going to get Porzingis back. So,
but he can't shoot, or Ntilikina can't shoot, though. You want a shooter with Luka. That's the issue.
True. I think if you surround him with enough shooting beyond, the point guard position, and plus Ntilikina can improve as well. But
look at who Dallas has now, though, aside from Luka and Dennis Smith Jr. Your starters are Wesley Matthews and Harrison Barnes. That's the depth of your shooting, right? DJ's not a shooter. Obviously, he's just gonna be a pick and roll guy. Wes Matthews, kind of shaky ever since his injuries. And then Harrison Barnes is like, he's Harrison Barnes. He's good for what he is, but he's nothing like crazily special. He's not going to be one of the best shooters in the league.
You say that, but surprisingly, I think he's top 10 in spot up shooting this year.
I think he's 15. I actually heard that the other day on the podcast. Shocking. Yeah. I know. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh man, I should stop myself, but I just couldn't stop.
But again, yeah, he has Harrison Barnes, so, he's on and off. But I know what you mean, but I think you're looking at the future for Dallas. You're not really looking at the right now.
Yeah, and
I think Luka's going to be the point guard of the future, essentially. He's going to be the point guard, really. And you have to look at guys that really fit around him. And I think that Ntilikina's still young, and he has improved his shooting a little bit this year. But he hasn't really been given the opportunity consistently because New York's all over the place, and obviously they're tanking too, so they keep playing players in these situations where they're just trying to lose games.
Oh, what a sad team to talk about. I want to talk about someone, I guess they're equally as sad, I guess, but Marcus Morris Sr.'s team in Boston. Hey, man, you got to give the man his respect.
I give Marcus Morris no respect.
Oh, so rude. Anyway, so they're, I think they're fifth place in the East right now.
Correct.
They lost to the Nets without Kyrie. This team is just in shambles, man. Like, they have way too many wing guys to know what to do with at this point. Al Horford really isn't playing to what we're expecting out of him. And Kyrie, for some reason, is the only person who can handle the offense, because Tatum came into this year thinking that he can shoot like fadeaway twos for some reason. Jaylen Brown just isn't as active as he was last year. Marcus Smart is, he's still Marcus Smart, let's be real. And then Terry Rozier thinks that he's a lot better than he actually is. Someone's salty about not getting that contract this year,
Yeah, like most people thought coming into the season, they just have too many guys. I mean, at some point you need role players to surround your best players with. And too many of these guys think that they're, like you said, star level type talent. And they need their minutes. And some games, guys like Jaylen Brown will be playing 15, 20 minutes a game. And then other games will be playing 30. So they're all over the place still right now. I mean, they made that change in the starting lineup with Smart and Marcus Morris. Only coming in. Those guys coming into the starting lineup. And obviously, they went on that 7-0 run. They won seven games in a row. But after that, they've been, what they were before that, just a really inconsistent team. And as you mentioned, their biggest issue right now is that Horford and Hayward obviously look old. And Hayward's coming back from injury, obviously.
Yeah, Hayward's acceptable.
I mean, Hayward's a situation where they're trying to play him into shape. And play him into, what he was before. But in doing so, they're sacrificing wins because they're playing him 25, 30 minutes a game in some of these games. And he's not producing at the same level. And he's playing over guys like, you know, Brown and Morris at points where they probably should be playing over him. But you're trying to prepare for the playoffs. So if this continues, they might end up being the fifth seed. And then you're playing on the road against one of the top four East teams, which are all very good and all, you know, pretty tough matchups besides maybe Philadelphia, who Boston just owns. But
wow. Wow. Okay.
It's true. I mean, Boston has destroyed them the last year plus, and you know, they've had a solution for Embiid with Horford's played him really well in the playoffs and in the regular season as well, and Baines has done pretty well against them too. And obviously they just don't really ever guard Simmons. They just have so many guys that are able to guard him on the perimeter, and it's just not a good matchup, obviously, but I don't know. I mean, Philadelphia's got one of the toughest schedules remaining. The next 13 games are against all playoff teams, I believe, so they might end up fifth themselves. But Boston's still the only team that really scares me in the playoffs as a Raptors fan.
So they're sitting in fifth spot right now. They're 25-18 as we record. Do you think they're closer to fourth or to sixth?
They're closer to fourth for sure. I don't think they're going to fall out to where Miami's going to be in the top five. Because I think eventually they are going to figure it out, or they're going to make a trade where they get rid of one of the guys. I'm not really sure who that would be, because they still want to keep their flexibility open to get Anthony Davis in the offseason. But, you know, they might look to make a smaller type of deal. Or maybe they just choose, you know, one of these guys to play the majority of the minutes on the wing and just sort of tell Gordon Hayward, like, sorry, you're out of luck. You're going to play 10 to 15 minutes, and that's just the way it's going to be.
I think that's what they should be doing. I don't see why Gordon Hayward is still getting like that kind of minutes. I understand you will obviously want to work him back into shape, but is he really the guy that you're going to rely on during the playoffs? He's coming off like a gruesome leg injury. Paul George didn't just come back the next year and was like Paul George again. You know, it takes time for them to get back into actual game shape and like a higher level of performance. I don't understand why people just thought that, oh yeah, it's Gordon Hayward. He's back to being like a 25 or like a 20-point scorer. It can't just happen like that, not after a year of not playing.
No, but the problem is at the same time, you have to try to play him into that type of role, because that's your best option against teams like Toronto and Golden State if you get that far in the playoffs, where you need multiple guys that are able to handle the ball and able to make plays off the dribble. And he's probably your second best playmaker, if not first best playmaker. When he's healthy anyway, with Kyrie, and he's probably a better option over Tatum when it comes to like, you know, decision-making off the dribble. But again, if he's not healthy, then you're sort of stuck and you're playing him minutes where he's not producing, and then you lose those minutes against, you know, teams' benches. So, and plus he hasn't really played well with Kyrie all year, and the games that he's had these, you know, monster efforts against Minnesota, especially, like Kyrie sat out both those games. So, It's catch 22. You play him too many minutes and he loses your game in the regular season. You hope that he's good for the playoffs, or you bench him and you have a player that's making 20 plus million a year who nobody's going to want, and sort of puts you in a situation where you're, you know, sort of screwed out of getting a top level talent because your roster's sort of stuck cap wise.
I wonder if Tatum not coming into this year with like, I guess optimal efficiency really slowed them down. Because it has to, right? Like, the whole system last year was revolving around him during the playoffs. But you didn't expect him to come back as, like, hero mode Tatum. You expected him to come back as still a, like, quote-unquote contributor in that sense. Where he's still going to be relied upon, but not relied upon to the extent that Kobe is in 08.
I mean, going back to our Dennis Smith talk, I think he's a guy like that, that just needs to be a primary ball handler. And when he's on the wing, you know, playing that type of role where he sort of has to fit in as a supporting player a lot of the time with Kyrie on the floor, his output isn't as great. And he's not trying as hard on defense, because everyone knows when you don't touch the ball as often, you're not playing as hard energy-wise. So, again, they might just have to make a decision where they make him the secondary option. And they just tell him, like, the ball is yours now with Kyrie. You guys go lead us. But it doesn't really seem like they're prepared to do that as of yet, because maybe they just don't trust him yet.
Or maybe they're just hoping Horford would come back a little bit healthier than he actually is.
Yeah, there's that as well. I mean, he was on a minutes restriction the last few games, up until, I think, 2 games ago, where he started playing 30 minutes again. And yesterday in Brooklyn, he only played 20 minutes in a game where they lost by, you know, they were losing by 30 points in that game. They obviously lost by less than that, but... Yeah, he just hasn't looked good, obviously. But if he is right come playoff season, and you know this team is able to figure out their rotation, they did for seven games. But again, beyond that, they haven't looked good. But again, I still think they're the second best team in the East right now, despite all this.
Despite Giannis, I don't know, man. This Giannis Lopez Chris Middleton combination is deadly.
I'm not a believer in them.
Oh, I am.
I'm still not. I don't think their gimmick offense is going to work when the games slow down. And against a team like Boston, Boston's going to wear them down throughout the course of a series.
What? What do you mean? All Giannis has to do is just body people.
He tried that last year against Boston without Kyrie. And, I mean, they lost in seven games. I know it's a different team, obviously, and a different coach. But
yeah.
I don't know.
And he's
also a lot
bigger this year. Like, he's much more dominant inside than he was last year.
True, but Boston has some guys that can slow him down. A little bit too. They have a lot of wing players that can at least, you know, guard him somewhat well one-on-one, where you don't have to bring as much help. So, and that'll, you know, cut off the three-point shooting, because Boston's one of the better teams in the NBA, you know, guarding the three-point shots. So I think against a team like Milwaukee, they'll be able to, you know, just sort of let Giannis go crazy and then cut off guys like Brooke Lopez and Brogdon from the perimeter.
Oh, no one cuts off Brooke Lopez.
Shooting those step back 28 footers.
He's shooting like Ryan Anderson like 4 years ago. Ryan Anderson, no conscience, man.
Shooting Steph Curry shots.
He is. He's basically Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Brooke Curry.
But
Steph Lopez.
Brooke Curry. Surprised his brother hasn't started, you know, shooting threes at a high clip. He started shooting them, but not very well, obviously.
No, he's still sticking to his weird little push hook shot things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what those are, but he loves those.
But, you know, getting back to the standings, though, I mean, Boston's in fifth right now, and they're 2.5 games behind Philadelphia. But let me just read off Philadelphia's schedule to you the next couple games, or next, actually 13 games, I believe it is. They have Minnesota at home. Minnesota's been a tough team, obviously, since the trade. At Indiana, versus Oklahoma, versus Houston, versus San Antonio, at Denver, at Lakers, which, you know, hopefully LeBron's back by then.
Not at Golden good for State. That one.
Yeah, let's see. Real. At Golden State, at Sacramento, at the tail end of their road trip, which is going to be a really tough game, obviously, because Sacramento plays really fast. Versus Toronto, versus Denver, versus the Lakers again, which, again, LeBron might be back by then. And then, again, versus Boston.
Oh,
so
man,
that's our next 13 games. And they're, I think 11 out of the 13 are on national TV as well. So the pressure's
really
going to be on. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, they're playing so many good teams, right? These are really good matchups, and, you know, the lights are going to be on them the next 13 games.
I wonder who's not on national TV. I'm assuming Sacramento and, like, Denver.
Sacramento says they are not on national TV, and it looks like the San Antonio game is not, but I'll have to confirm that.
Fair. Wow, that means Philadelphia Denver is on national TV?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow.
Might just be like NBA TV, though. Yeah, it's NBA TV, so that sort of counts.
I'm not counting that. I'm not counting extra subscription. Let's be real.
In any case, I mean, that's 13 games leading up to the trade deadline, so if they go, 3-10 over the course of that period, they might think about maybe even trying to trade Butler at that point, because you just have a team that's really not ready to take that next step.
No. Relax. They're not going to go 3-10, okay? I guarantee
That's a tough climb right there, man. They got a lot of good teams in there.
I will bet with you that they do not go 3-10. That is an absurdly low number of wins for a team this good.
They're not going 500.
I'd say they're closer to 500 than 3-10.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
We'll side bet afterwards.
Okay. Like, how many games are they going to be a favorite in on this 13-game span? And I don't really think there's going to be a lot of them.
At least, like, 4.
Yeah, but even still, in that case, they're way under 500, right? So, I don't know. I think it's going to be really tough for them, and it's going to, you know, test their identity and test who they really are, because, you know, they've had injuries, too, the last couple weeks.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man, this is sad. Let's go to someone, happier. I know that you've been screaming about these guys a lot over the past couple of weeks, so you can lead this one. The Utah Jazz are suddenly in the playoff picture at 24-21, and they're riding a hot streak.
Yeah, and they're beating up some really bad teams now, obviously, but that's the advantage that they have right now because they have the best remaining strength of schedule against, you know, the rest of the NBA, and they're showing it right now by beating these teams. And obviously, they made the change where they were sort of forced into it with Rubio's injury, but Mitchell's playing the one now, and he looks a lot more comfortable in that position. And he's playing against bad teams, but he's put up a bunch of really good games in a row. I think he's averaging around 28 points a game since he's played point guard. And now they have Royce O'Neal playing in the starting lineup, so that brings more length and defensive versatility. And the Jazz look like the Jazz again. And they've been the best defense since early December as well. So, you know, the numbers have finally got back to where you would expect them to be with Utah.
Yeah, so they're 7-3 over the past 10 games, right? Currently sitting on a 4-game winning streak. Obviously, like you said, they beat up on really crappy teams, i.e. the Magic, the Lakers, the Bulls, and the Pistons. Before that, they beat up on the Cavaliers and the Pistons again, and the Knicks. Like, they're literally just beating teams that they're supposed to beat, right? Which is exactly what you want. You want them going into these games thinking, you know, this is easy on the schedule, but we got to make sure we secure this W. No other issues, no other questions, and that's what they have to do.
Yeah, they're taking care of business, and they're moving up the standings. I think by the trade deadline, they might be in the top four again, with a lot of these teams having, you know, major injuries, with Houston losing Capella as well. I mean, they just have a one-man team essentially now.
Yeah.
Portland's been struggling the last couple of games. The Clippers have been a much below 500 team in the last month.
Yeah, they're not great right now either.
So, you could definitely see Utah being in the top three, possibly, like we sort of predicted at the start of the year, with their strength of schedule now. And maybe once they get Rubio back, maybe they bring him off the bench and, you know, create more depth in their bench unit.
You think they can overcome OKC, though? I don't know, man. I think OKC is solidified in the third spot.
I don't know about that. According to ESPN, Oklahoma has the third toughest schedule going forward, and they've lost a lot of winnable games the last week or so. So maybe they're a team that could be looking at a downslide in the standings.
Interesting. So who's got, like, the best strength of schedule going forward right now?
Utah.
By a wide margin?
It's not by much. Portland's second. So Portland also could be looking at a move up in the rankings, sort of like they did last year, taking advantage of teams having major injuries in the second part of the year. So those two teams could end up in the top, you know, 3-4 of the conference again.
Do you think this Rubio injury is actually like a blessing in disguise for them to literally just rely on Donovan Mitchell as a primary ball handler? You throw a more versatile wing in there like Royce O'Neal, and it makes their defense more like, I don't know, I don't want to just say versatile, but like expandable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we always talked about putting a point guard that can shoot next to Mitchell, but they've sort of went the opposite way and just made him the point guard and got more shooting wing around him with Royce O'Neal, and then obviously Korver coming off the bench. So yeah, they just needed a situation where, like, they got Joe Ingles going too as well, which is big. Just providing more spacing on the floor for those two guys as their primary ball handlers has helped a lot the last few games. But I still think they need another player that can really score. I'm not sure who that player is, but I think they still have a trade to be made, like a lot of teams, obviously.
Dennis Smith Jr. No.
A guy that can shoot.
He'd be awful, I mean, on that team.
Yeah, he would not fit at all. Like, I would guess that Coach Snyder would probably play a guy like Raul Neto over him.
It wouldn't be surprising. Neto's nice, man. Neto's a good, like, backup point guard.
Yeah, I mean, to have, like, a 23, 24-year-old third-string point guard that can play like that, that's a luxury.
They need Monte Morris.
Talk about best backup point guard in the NBA right there.
Everyone needs Monte Morris.
He's great.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Stats Corner.
Well, for Stats Corner, I got a couple things for you.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll start off with personal fouls per game.
Okay.
So based on what you've seen so far, you know, throughout the halfway point of the season, who do you think fouls the most and fouls the least? We'll start off with the least amount of fouls.
The least?
So historically, who fouls the least amount throughout the course of an NBA game on average as a team? So this has been consistent over the course of the last 20 years, really. So Who's the number one seed in that regard?
The Spurs?
Correct. Wow. Spurs are way ahead of everyone else at only 18.4 fouls per game. They're a team that keeps teams off the line.
It makes sense that Duncan's always surprised when he gets called for a foul then.
It's true.
It's like, how can it be me? I never foul people. Look at our numbers. Smart guy.
So we're not going to do top five and bottom five, I guess. Who's the worst team in the NBA in terms of fouling guys?
I'm going to assume one of like the really crappy defensive teams. York, Cleveland, Phoenix.
Phoenix Atlanta. Is the last in the NBA. And Atlanta is the second worst.
Yeah. DeAndre Ayton fouls a lot.
Yeah, he's had his moments, but overall he hasn't been great on defense, obviously.
Yeah. Also, Jaren Jackson, like, he's such a good defender, but he bites on every fake, man. You just got to keep your feet on the ground. Stop jumping in the air.
Yeah, his foul rate is not good.
Yeah, like, come on. And the worst
part... That's like all young big men, though. All of them go through that.
Yeah, it's true. I find it really irritating when guys are biting at fakes, like, on the perimeter. Like, dude, you're not going to block the jump shot anyways, or like the fadeaway, or the sidestep. Why don't you just contest with your feet on the ground? You know what I mean?
They're anxious to prove themselves to obviously get the highlight reels. And, it is a highlight reel.
it's more irritating when it's someone like Harden. Like, I was watching the game against Memphis yesterday, and who's this Memphis guy? Carter? Javon Carter? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was covering Harden, and like, I don't know how Harden gets away with these, but he's literally just jumping. Carter is just closing out normally, like how you would want a normal closeout on the ground, and he still gets called for a foul somehow, saying that they're not giving him enough like space to land. But like, my man, you still landed normally. What's the issue? I don't understand.
Yeah, a lot of the guys now are just like flopping backwards once, you know, guys coming at them on the perimeter to like try to show that pushed them or got their feet underneath them. So it's one of those things the NBA has to clean up.
It's a real Reggie Miller play. I hate it so much.
What they should start doing is start calling offensive fouls when guys do the side shot. So like when they sidestep somebody and pump fake and then jump in their direction instead of like going up for a straight shot, that should be an offensive foul, like the Kevin Love play.
I was going to say Jason Kidd, but yeah.
Yeah, him too.
Oh, man, those guys are the worst for it. Jeez. All right, next.
It's amazing that refs still fall for it as well.
Yeah, they're dumb. I'm kidding, they're not dumb. Refs are very underrated. I take it all back.
Yeah. So the next thing, we're just going to go back. This is the very last thing. So we're going to go back to offensive efficiency. So throughout the first half of the year, there's been a few changes in the top five of offensive efficiency for teams. So can you name the top five teams right now in offensive efficiency?
Toronto.
Toronto's actually seventh now. They dropped out of the top five.
Wow, losers.
Hey, your team has two. They're sixth.
Yeah, whatever. Denver's they're better than seventh. Give me Golden State.
Barely. Yeah, Golden State's number one.
Yeah. Is Houston in there somehow?
Houston is now in the top five after James' surge. They are fourth.
Did you look at Houston's box score yesterday?
No, I didn't bother.
After the Capella injury, man, I'm just going to start watching their box score more than anything else now. Harden at halftime had 36, ended with 57. And I think like two other guys scored in double digits tops. He's really
if I'm teams going forward, I basically have my most athletic wing guy come over and double team him every single time and just force the other guys to pile up enough points to beat you.
Yeah, let PJ Tucker shoot all he wants. Or Gerald Green, you know what I mean? Like, these guys are not going to beat you consistently.
Yeah, the fact that Memphis, of all teams, couldn't figure that out. Like, there's only a certain amount of points that team can score if you're taking Harden's, you know, 40-plus points out of it. If you just limit him to, like, you know, a 30 and 15 type of game, which is crazy to say. But there's not another guy in that roster that can really shoulder that load game to game. I mean, Austin Rivers can have 25-point games every once in a while, but, you know, guys like Gerald Green are not going to score more than 20, more than one game in a row. Oh, so you just play the numbers.
True. All right, anyways, Milwaukee?
Yep, they've been in the top five all year. They're number three.
All right, so
the other two might be tougher to get.
So I have 1, 3, and 5, right?
You have 1, 3, and 4.
Oh, 1, 3, 4. 4? Houston's 4?
since fourth.
Oh, wow. Portland?
Portland is not anywhere in the top 10. Actually, no, they're 10th, sorry.
Damn.
10th.
San Antonio?
Surprisingly, yes. They've surged into number 5 overall.
Wow. Look at these guys.
Yeah, they've been the most efficient three-point shooting team. They don't take that many, but they do hit them.
It's all thanks to Derek White and Bryn Forbes.
Indeed. And Marco, too.
True. Marco. Big player.
And Davis Bertans, who's been the best three-point shooter in the NBA for part of the year, too.
Who expected to hear that, eh?
Yeah.
Is it a West team?
It is.
Another West team.
This team seems to always have, you know, 125, 120 type of games. Their pace is ridiculous.
It can't be Sacramento.
No.
LA? The Clippers?
Nope. The Clippers are 8th, and Sacramento's 14th, surprisingly. They put up a lot of shots, but I guess not at a high efficiency.
What the hell? Who else is there in the West? The Lakers?
No, the Lakers are 22nd, though. Yeah, their defense has been much better than their offense.
Wow. Dallas?
No, Dallas is in the 18th.
This is good. Minnesota? I don't know, man.
New Orleans.
What? Really?
They put up a ton of points every game. So, and obviously they have Davis and Randall who just stick around the basket. So,
yeah. Wow. That was unexpected. I did not. Wow. New Orleans. Hold on. I just want to vent about this really quickly. You can consider this grinding my gears or whatever. Can we just recognize that Bill Simmons keeps talking about New Orleans actually having a good team around Anthony Davis? And it's like the lunacy of this statement.
I think they have a good core around him in the sense that you have like your top three or four guys around him are really good players. But as many people pointed out, you can't really play your top four players at the same time with Holiday, Randall, and Mirotic. So, which is why they should probably look at moving a guy like Randall.
Exactly. Also, besides that, so you have like three good players and then like, okay, hold on. Davis and Holiday, obviously really good players. Randall and Mirotic, decent to good, right? Like, they're not incredible or anything, but
they're good players.
Yeah. Aside from that, name me one good player on that roster. Etuan Moore?
I like Etuan Moore. He's played well. Yeah.
He's a decent player. He's not a good player. He's also a really undersized three.
Yeah, and they've been forced to play him at the three of the last 2 years because they have nobody else.
That's what I mean. How are we trying to justify this team as being quote-unquote good or like having a quote-unquote good roster when Etuan Moore is your three and you have zero bench, zero wing depth?
Like, I think a lot of people look at it from the standpoint that Anthony Davis sort of is the new Kevin Garnett. So people look at KG's rosters back and then they're just like, you know, Kevin Garnett never really had the talent besides that 1 year where they had Cassell and Sprewell in comparison to what Davis right now. He always had guys like Troy Hudson and Wally Szczerbiak and a bunch of guys that shouldn't have been in the NBA.
Yo, Wally Szczerbiak deserved to be in the NBA.
I mean, besides.
Yeah. Let's relax.
He was a good player, but
KG had rest Irvin of the Johnson, roster. You know? Michael Olowokandi was there.
Gary Trent.
Ooh, good pull.
Anthony Peeler.
Yo, Peeler was good for like a year and a half.
Yeah, and he punched Kevin Garnett in the face too.
Yeah, well, he probably deserved it. It's Kevin Garnett. He deserves to be punched in the face from time to time. Just nobody does it.
Yeah, I guess somebody has to stand up to him, right?
Exactly. And then when Carmelo waited for him, everyone's like, oh my god, Carmelo's waiting to fight Kevin Garnett. You know, Kevin Garnett deserves it.
Nah, Garnett was too busy going back on the bus to get those Honey Nut Cheerios.
He's kind of an asshole. I'm just saying. It's well recognized that KG's an asshole. Let's be real. Anyways, I just had to get that off my chest because every time I hear it, it's just really irritating to me that people would think that New Orleans has actually a good roster.
They actually got a good wing for Randall, though, I think that team could actually be pretty dangerous in the playoffs. I mean, because last year they looked really good in the playoffs, even against Golden State. Like, they put up a fight at least, even though they lost, I think it was 4-1. But obviously against Portland, they dominated. But you trade a guy like Randall for a guy like, you know, Otto Porter Jr. or somebody along those lines that can contribute on the wing and play 35 minutes of solid basketball with the guys that they already have there, with Mirotić, who fits seamlessly with with Davis and Holiday, who's, you know, probably he's an all-star caliber point guard, obviously, but and then maybe get a guy in the buyout market to fill out your bench, and you have a pretty good top seven. So at that point, it's a matter of making the playoffs and then hopefully making some noise at that point, because the rest of the West is sort of jumbled beyond the top two, maybe three.
Yeah, that's a lot of optimistic moves for you know, a front office that hasn't really done much.
I mean, if they're trying to win now and don't care about the money, then bringing on Otto Porter's extra year or two versus Randall, who's going to be expiring after this year, might be a move they should look at.
Good note to end on. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. Obviously on Instagram and Twitter at or a Stretch4Podcast. And until next time, peace.